Blog Talk Radio.
You said recently, while Mrs. Clinton was meeting socially with the prime minister of a country, I was sitting down and negotiating with them. I know my experience is considerably deeper and more relevant. Do you stand by that quote, and is your inference that she is less qualified than you to be president?
I'm not running against Hillary Clinton. I'm running to lead the free world. I'm running to lead this country. And the irony is Rudy Giuliani, probably the most underqualified man since George Bush to seek the presidency, is here talking about any of the people here. Rudy Giuliani. I mean, think about it. Rudy Giuliani, there's only three things he mentioned in a sentence, a noun and a verb and 9/11. I mean, there's nothing else. There's nothing else. And I mean it sincerely. He is genuinely not qualified to be president. Here's a man who brags about how he made the city safe. It was the Biden crime bill that became the Clinton crime bill that allowed him to do that. They wipe it out. He remains silent. The 9/11 commission comes along and says, why do you keep your city safe? And then the following things, he's been silent. He's been done nothing. And now he's talking about he's going to go in and he will demonstrate to Iran he's going to, in fact, lay down the law. This man is truly not qualified to be president. I'm looking forward to running against Rudy Giuliani. And with regard to my experience, hey, Bill, 1979. Qualified to be president. I'm looking forward to running against Rudy Giuliani. And with regard to my experience, hey, Bill, 1979.
Good morning. We come on the air as the nation marks 22 years since the terror attacks of September 11th. Events are being held across the country today to honor and remember the nearly 3,000 people who died here in New York, at the Pentagon in Washington, and near Shanksville, Pennsylvania. The commemoration ceremony in Lower Manhattan is getting underway at this hour. The names of the fallen being read aloud, along with moments of silence to mark the times each tower was struck here in New York City. NBC's Rahema Ellis is there for us in Lower Manhattan, hallowed ground this morning. Rahema, good morning.
Good morning, Savannah. Thousands are gathering here at what's been known as Ground Zero to remember those lives lost just 22 years ago on September 11th. Behind me, you can see One World Trade Tower. This is where it sits in the footprint of what was the Twin Towers. And people will never forget, they say, what happened that day. And now they are here to remember it. Dignitaries included in the events, the mayor, the governor, including the former mayor, Rudy Giuliani, who became known as America's mayor as a result of it. And you will...
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Kitchen Politics 123, the radio show. Well, thank you for joining us. I'm David Franklin in New Mexico. Gloria, are you there?
Hello?
Hello, Lori. Hi.
Can you hear me?
Oh, I thought you were on air. I don't know what happened. Yes, loud and clear. Let's try this again.
Oh, okay.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Kitchen Politics 123 Radio Show. I'm David Franklin in New Mexico.
Hi. Good evening, everyone. This is Lori Picka from Michigan, and today we are remembering September 11th, 22 years ago. And it's funny because when you talk to people about 9/11, everyone remembers what they were doing that day. I remember I was at work. We were seeing patients that day, and one of the patients walked into the office and said, "Did you hear what happened?" And we said, "No," because we didn't have the television on at the time. And then, of course, when they told us about, you know, what had happened, we turned on the TV, and we were just... there are no words for the way that we felt. All of us were just, you know, and that feeling in the days and the weeks after. And I can still, when I close my eyes, I still can see those towers and burning and the black smoke and the sadness that was all around everything. So, and what were you doing, David?
Well, I was in college in Ohio. We were preparing for the finals. And, you know, we'll have like a 15-minute break. I noticed people running into the lobby of the hotel. It was the Ramada Inn, Nelsonville, Ohio. And, you know, I was outside with other people smoking a cigarette, chatting, you know. And then, you know, we'd notice everybody rushing to the lobby. I said, okay, what the hell is happening? So I went there, crowded lobby. And, you know, as soon as we walked in, within 2 minutes, the second plane crashed into... second Twin Tower, and we're like, oh my God, what the hell is happening? And when that happened, everybody was like looking on each other in disbelief. I was like, okay, is this a nightmare or is the Hollywood stunt gone wrong? You know, this is not happening right now. And, you know, people are crying and people are freaking out and, you know, classes and finals, you know, was postponed for 2 days. And, you know, like when the towers start coming down, it's like everybody in unison was like, oh, you know, like, okay, we've been attacked. What are we doing about it now? What the hell is happening? And so later on down in the night, went to Athens, Ohio, where on that, I can't remember, I think it's Bourbon Street. I don't remember where, you know, there's a long string of bars on that avenue. People are just like, you know, freaking out, you know, and, you know, or having their drinks, shopping, about what happened and other things. And lo and behold, would you believe that, you know, international students from the Middle East were waving their Palestinian flags and their Hezbollah, although everybody could have, why do you have to wear, you know, fly the Hezbollah flag? A known terrorist organization. And they're celebrating, beating drums, blowing horns. And the police was turning a blind eye. And Americans were there, beating living bejesus out of them within inches of their lives. And it was just a weird, tense moment, you know? And for the next 2-3 days, people were just, it was like an out-of-body experience, you know? And people... we're just sick and tired, you know, this, you know, Bin Laden and what have you. He took credit for, you know, and kind of took credit for bringing down the Twin Towers and everything. And for the next month or so, it was just, you know, tension. Tension was in the air, you know? And there was even protection for the Middle East and those who were there and what have you. You know, and some of them, larger complaints, and local force saying that they're meeting up. I don't know if anything came out of it, but, you know, I'm not saying violence is the answer or the solution, but, you know, when that never happened, and you wave your Hezbollah flag and beat them drums and drum balls and singing, you know, exactly. You know, coming to American soil and something that your people did. And again, not all Muslims and not all, you know, people who worship, you know, are bad people. But these people deserve fully what they got, an ass whooping. If you attack America, you attack all of us. I don't care who the fuck you are.
I agree.
So
I just want to go over for a moment. Go ahead.
You know, it's a solemn day and everything in America. We'll never forget what happened on that day and across the country, you know, what happened and the reaction and everything. So, you know, let's just unite and just give peace a chance, as John Lennon say. You know, life is too short to be having animosity and wars and famine and what have you. Let's just love each other. Go ahead.
I was just going to read just a little bit of what happened that day. So it just makes me kind of, it's very melancholy. September 11th attacks, 9/11, were four coordinated Islamic suicide terrorist attacks carried out by Al-Qaeda against the United States on Tuesday, September 11th, 2001. That morning, 19 terrorists hijacked four commercial airliners scheduled to travel to New England and mid-Atlantic regions of the East Coast to California. The hijackers crashed the first two planes into the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center in New York City, two of the world's five tallest buildings at the time, and aimed the next two flights towards targets in or near Washington, D.C., in an attack on the nation's capital. The third team succeeded in crashing into the Pentagon, the headquarters of the U.S. Department of Defense in Arlington County, Virginia, while the fourth plane crashed in rural Pennsylvania following a passenger revolt. The attacks killed near 33,000 people and instigated the multi-decade of global war on terror. So, it's sad because, you know, I watched today a couple of the memorial services, and it's just, you know, people are still suffering from it. And I hope something like that never happens again. But who knows? You know, it's. And just watching, you know, the rescue workers, you know, day after day digging in the rubble and, you know, were looking for their loved ones. And it was just so traumatic and horrific and sad and scary, too. Very scary.
And the first impact was that, the first impact was that the American Airlines Flight 11 crashed in the North Tower of the World Trade Center. In Lower Manhattan at 8:46 a.m., 16 minutes later, which I saw and other students at college where I attended saw, 9:03 a.m., the World Trade Center South Tower was hit by American Airlines Flight 175. The skyscrapers collapsed within an hour of that happening, and bringing about destruction of the remaining five structures in the World Trade Center complex, and the destroying various other buildings surrounding the towers and everything. Over 25,000 people were injured because of the smoke and the inhalation and what have you, where, you know, the dust and the debris and what have you. Up to this day, like you said, there are still problems in terms of asthma, lung problems, cancers, you know, things like that. Also, you know, in Shanksville and Stony Creek Township, the hijackers crashed a plane. It was United Flight 93, not a flight. Mm-hmm. American Airlines Flight 77 crashed in the Pentagon. You know, so within hours of the attack, the Central Intelligence Agency, the CIA, determined that Al-Qaeda was responsible. And the United States formally responded by launching the war on terror and invading Afghanistan to depose the Taliban, which rejected the conditions of U.S. terms to expel Al-Qaeda from Afghanistan and extradite its leaders. So Article 5 of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization call upon allies to fight Al-Qaeda, and the United States and NATO invasion forces struck through Afghanistan, and Al-Qaeda leader Osama bin Laden disappeared into the White Mountains, eluding captivity by Western forces. And although bin Laden initially denied any involvement in 2004, he formally claimed responsibility for the attacks. Al-Qaeda cited motivations, including U.S. support of Israel, the presence of U.S. military bases in Saudi Arabia, and sanctions against Iraq. And now, wrongfully, we went to invade Iraq because there was a claim that there was weapons of mass destruction, which turned out to be a lie. And, you know, George Bush and Dick Cheney and that administration claimed that Al-Qaeda was working with Saddam Hussein. But as the school children in China know, that Osama bin Laden and Saddam Hussein are two different types of Muslim. One is Sunni, one is Shia, and those sects in the Muslim community hated each other. Two different philosophies and everything. And so the real reason why we attacked Iraq was for the oil, and also because Saddam Hussein threatened George H.W. Bush to assassinate him. Mm-hmm. You know, and we really wanted the people's oil. Let's just call a spade a spade. And a manhunt for Osama bin Laden concluded May 2nd, 2011. And he was killed during a U.S. military raid after being tracked down on the compound of Abbottabad in Pakistan. And the president then was Barack Obama. We got the son of a bitch, finally. And then thereafter, we keep getting leaders who took over from him, you know. And did we win a war on terror? No, because we can't know who terrorists are. So the war on terror is a big oxymoron, if you think about it. But, you know, if you attack us, we're going to get you back. We're going to find you, whichever crease and crevice you are in the world, whichever cave you are, and we're going to kill you. And we're going to kill people who support you. We don't care who you are. You don't attack the United States. Mm-hmm. You don't kill our people. And you don't brag about it. That's what killed me when I was in Ohio, when they were dancing and celebrating. You don't do that. You don't do that shit. Not on American soil. Not ever.
Yep. I agree. Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely.
Yes, man. So it generated at least $10 billion in infrastructure and property damage. And it was a deadliest terrorist attack in American history. And both firefighters and law enforcement personnel in the United States, you know, went missing or died. You know, up to this day, some of them, you know, are missing and, you know, presumed dead. And loss of life stemming from the impact of Flight 11 secured its place as the most lethal plane crash in aviation history, followed by the death toll of Flight 175. The destruction of the World Trade Center and its environs seriously harmed the U.S. economy and induced global market shocks. So the anti-terrorism legislation was passed, the Patriot Act, Law Enforcement Intelligence Agency, you know, colluded with each other and compared notes and everything, and the Patriot Act was signed and became law, and also the Homeland Security Department was formed. And, you know, ever since it happened, the World Trade Center, the construction of the One World Trade Center began in November 2006, and it opened in November 2014. memorials of the attacks include the National September 11 Memorial Museum in New York, the Pentagon Memorial at Arlington, Virginia, and Flight 93 National Memorial at the Pennsylvania crash site. You know, so every year since 2006 till now, we've been remembering September 11th and everything. And you'll never forget, this is worse than Pearl Harbor. It should not have happened. And, you know, frankly, how I see it is that George Bush, the then president, George W. Bush, he didn't read the daily presidential briefing. The previous administration, Bill Clinton, wanted to go after Osama bin Laden because, you remember, a couple of years before that, Al-Qaeda tried to blow up a World Trade Center in the car park below ground level. It failed miserably. Sheikh Khalid Mohammed was captured and tried, and he has life imprisonment for his role in that failed attempt of blowing up the World Trade Center. You know, and it was during the Monica Lewinsky scandal where, you know, the Republicans impeached Bill Clinton and threatened to impeach him again if he went after Osama bin Laden. So since then, it's been brewing. And, you know, for whatever reason, you know, the CIA, the FBI, intelligence committee, all those people involved in national intelligence, they weren't, like, you know, comparing notes and talking about how we can stop Al-Qaeda, because we knew the attack was coming, we just didn't know when. And because a lot was happening with Bill Clinton getting impeached and Republicans blocking everything, as they always do, it's like things just went to hell September 11th, you know, and not casting blame, but, you know, Republicans, I feel, you know, are just part to blame for what happened. But I digress, you know.
Yeah, there's no proof, and you're probably right. No proof. So you can't even go. But there are 11 unknown facts about 9/11 terrorist attacks. I thought this was interesting. I won't read the whole thing, but I'll just read. Ground Zero burned for 99 days. Michael Jackson was almost a victim. Seth MacFarlane also nearly escaped. A woman survived 27 hours in the wreckage. Many British people died. The terrorists used elaborate code names. A chance encounter on the train was key. I should read that one, huh? The 9/11 ringleader, Muhammad Atta, and several of his accomplices had originally planned to undertake their jihad by battling Russian forces in Chechnya. But while traveling on a train in Germany in 1999, the group was approached by a stranger who was affiliated with Al-Qaeda. As a consequence of this meeting, Atta's group was introduced to Osama bin Laden, paving the way for 9/11. Interesting. Company lost the majority of its staff. I guess we should say which one that is. Let me see. Many bases in the World Trade Center were decimated by the attacks, but none more so than the investment bank Cantor Fitzgerald. The company's offices were situated above the plane's impact, meaning that nobody present at work that day survived. Of its 960 employees, 658 were killed. Now, that's terrible. I didn't know that either. the co-creator of Frasier was killed. Number 10 is one of the intended targets is still a mystery. I should read that too. Three of the planes hijacked on 9/11 hit their intended targets. the Twin Towers, and the Pentagon. The fourth plane, United Airlines Flight 93, was brought down after the passengers bravely rose up against the hijackers. To date, we still don't know for certain where the plane was heading. It's likely to have been either the White House or the U.S. Capitol, but experts have long disagreed on which of these iconic buildings had been on the terrorist radar. Well, I think either of those would be a good guess. Probably the U.S. Capitol, but can't say, right?
Yeah.
Then number 11, a much bigger terrorist plot was initially proposed. Oh. So Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the architect of 9/11, originally wanted to have 9 planes flown into a variety of targets, including nuclear power plants. A 10th plane would have been landed at an airport where all male passengers would have been killed in a grisly media spectacle. The plan was deemed too complex and scaled back to just 4 planes. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's,
yeah, and
I didn't know. Mm-hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is the blind sheikh who was the mastermind along with Osama bin Laden about hijacking planes and running it in World Trade Center. And he's, if I remember correctly, serving life imprisonment. You know, so you know, still have to be vigilant. And again, let me just say that not all Muslims, not all Arabs, not all Middle Easterners are pro-Al-Qaeda or pro-terrorists. Mm-hmm. Let's just put that out there, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, as I say, you know, as John Lennon said, give peace a chance, love one another, be nice to each other. You know, don't take skin off your back to be thoughtful. And, you know, to you know, just think of your fellow man and
have,
gracious, be humble, and help each other, not try to downplay and beat down on each other. That's not what life is about, you know. And the terrorists use elaborate code names. The 9/11 attackers refer to some of their target using elaborate code names. They call the Pentagon, for example, the Faculty of Fine Arts, while the North Tower, the World Trade Center, was the Faculty of Town Planning. So the attacks themselves were referred to as the first semester, while the 19 terrorists were dubbed 19 certificates for private education. Yeah, so it was an elaborate plan. You know, like I say, the CIA and whoever else knew what, you know, kind of were keeping tabs on these people, but they didn't know when it was going to happen. So, you know, we're caught with our pants down and everything. And again, if George Bush had read the daily presidential briefing, he would have been on top of it. But, you know how Republican presidents are. They hate reading. They hate, you know, anything to do with any reading. And imagine that woman who survived 27 hours in a wreckage. You know, miraculously, several people were pulled alive from the scorched wreckage from World Trade Center. And the last to be saved was this lady named Janelle Guzman McMillan, a young migrant from Trinidad and Tobago who worked as an office assistant in the North Tower. So she had been making her way down a stairwell when, as she later described, quote, the walls burst open and a rubble came falling down. Can you just imagine going through that crap, you know, and somehow surviving a skyscraper collapse on top of her, you know, so she's one lucky woman, you know.
Oh, yeah.
27 she hours had... before, you know, somebody came and rescued her.
Yep. Yep. Amazing.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't her time. That's how I look at stuff. You know, it just wasn't her time. She was strong and was able
to... And another lucky person was Seth MacFarlane, because I've seen him on talk shows, Graham Norton Show, and Watch What Happened Live, and he was describing how, you know, because he missed a departure by 10 minutes, he was spared being on flight 11. You know, he woke 45 minutes late, you know, and then he was rushing to get to the flight, but he was 10 minutes late, so...
wow, you know, yeah. Somebody's looking out for him. Michael Jackson, the night before 9/11, Michael Jackson put on a lavish concert in New York in Madison Square Gardens. He then stayed up late chatting to his mother and sister. He stayed up so late, in fact, that he overslept and missed the meeting show to take place in the Twin Towers the next morning. So again, Michael Jackson was lucky, like Seth MacFarlane.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
You know, we're not into conspiracy theories or nothing, but I don't know if you've seen Fahrenheit 9/11 by, what's his name? He's from Michigan. Michael, help me out.
Who are you? I missed
you know
what
him?
You said. Michael Moore?
Fahrenheit 9/11. Michael Moore, yes, yes, yes. He did a documentary about 9/11 and everything. I think it won an Academy Award. People should see that. And there are a lot of documentaries about 9/11. What do you think, America? Do you think it was an organized conspiracy that it knew what was going to happen, when it was going to happen, what caused the working style war on terrorism and boost up the military-industrial complex and made it happen as an excuse to have the Patriot Act and go to war, a war that we couldn't win, and a war that would last probably forever. Over the 20 years, it's been something like $20 trillion that has taken to fight the war on terror. Did we win the war on terror? Is it a winnable war on terror? You know, those things you have to ask. But as I said, we're not conspiracy theorists. So, you know, we're sort of like that. We're just putting the question out there. And, you know, something like that should never happen in the United States ever again on American soil. It is disgraceful that we're so underprepared. It should never happen again. We thought we would learn our lesson from Pearl Harbor, but obviously not. You know, we should be better in terms of, you know, because we feed so much money in the military-industrial complex. It should be on their toes 24/7 guarding us, protecting us. Homeland Security has been doing a great job since then. You know, just keep good work, Homeland Security. So we take our first two calls now. The number to call it is 515-605-9802. Say your first name where you're calling from and tell us about your experience on September 11th, 2001. What was it like? What do you remember? What was your reaction? And years later, how do you feel about it? So welcome, caller. Elaine in Michigan, and I think this is...
good evening.
Hello, Elaine. How are you doing?
Good evening.
Hey, you know what? I'm also here, too. Eric Brantley in Michigan here, also here.
Oh, hi, Eric. How are you?
How's everybody doing? Elaine, good to hear from you.
Good. Yes, ma'am. So, starting with Elaine. Oh, okay. Go ahead, Eric.
Well.
Oh, no. I was just going to say right quick that the, and I don't know if it was mentioned on this show. We probably talked about it a little bit. I'm glad to see that there were, I think, what was in the past half year, and I'm probably underestimating this number, but there was six Proud Boys members, the Oath Keepers, you know, arrested, prosecuted, convicted. They're sentenced to an average of 10 to 22 years. They got different sentences.
Mm-hmm.
One got 10, one got 12, 15, 16, 17, 18, 22. And here's the thing about that. This is what I found to be funny, and I actually just talked about this on my show the other night, and this is actually so far the latest video that I did. Anybody who wants to go and check it, feel free to check the YouTube. You know, his name is Enrique Tarrio, and he got 22 years. And the part that I found to be hilarious was his mother's reaction to the situation, and she actually said that the United States justice system has failed us, because she's saying that he gets a higher sentence punishing than people who are convicted of murder and rape. Well, you know what? The thing about that is this whole thing is called sedition. What Trump and his supporters and the MAGA crowd did on January 6th, you know, that is a felony, that is punishable by, you know, time in federal prison. And the average penalty for rape in most states is like 5 to 10, and that's on one count. in that particular sentence, yeah, I could see that. But let's face it. I mean, you're talking second to first degree murder. Usually that's 20 to 25 to life. I don't know what she means on that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the fact of the matter is when the whole thing first started, I mean, I didn't even know how many people were going to get prosecuted and convicted for it. It's good to see that we have some justice going on because these people only believe in law and order when it comes to the other side getting prosecuted and arrested and convicted and committing crimes and whatnot. When it's their side, they don't see it. And so how many of you have seen or heard that? Elaine, did you hear anything about that?
About what?
The guy who got arrested for January 6th, so he just got convicted. He got 22 years. His name is Enrique mm-hmm. Tarrio. And his mother came out and, his mother came out and said that the justice system has failed us. And she claims that the government used her son as a pawn, as a political pawn.
You don't think the Republican Party and Trump's attorneys didn't coach her? I mean, come on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. For
and
sure.
and you know what? We ought to just ignore what she said.
Yeah. You know,
I mean, I just find it to be comical, that's all.
Yeah, I think
you know,
it's just
I find it to be treason. I'm sorry. And you know, they used to hang people for treason. You know,
they
that was a
shoot them also. Firing squad.
That's right. Yes, for treason. So, these people are kind of lucky in my eyes. That they're getting 22 years, and I don't care. I mean, they knew what they were doing. There is no excuse for what they did, none whatsoever. None
in the meantime, Mr. Tidswell is messing with our military. Yeah. And how much damage is he doing? How wide open is he creating the United States? I think he is committing treason.
I agree with you.
You said, hold on. You said who?
How do you pronounce his name?
You're talking about the senator who replaced Doug Jones in Alabama.
Yes.
You know what? I haven't seen or heard from him much recently. What did I miss on that?
Well, you know,
so because of
he's still holding it up. He's still holding up the promotions. He is devastating the military. And then in the second breath, they're saying nobody wants to join. Why in the hell should they? You're going to work your butt off, and it comes time for your promotion, and you aren't going to get it? Why should you even think about joining?
The whole thing is that...
He's holding the country hostage. He's holding the country hostage because he wants to climb in between women's legs.
Yeah.
I'm going to keep telling it like that. Maybe somebody will come down and start repeating.
Yeah, so Tommy Tuberville, Republican from Alabama, he's a member of Armed Services Committee in the U.S. Senate. He has blockaded hundreds of military promotions for months over his objection to the Defense Department policy that provides paid time off and reimbursement travel costs for service members and dependents seeking abortion. Now, as Elaine and other women who called into the show and, you know, spoke over Facebook and everything, what has a woman's body and what she does with her body any business of a federal government? You know, Republicans are the same ones who are saying, oh, you know, keep big government out of, you know, my life. But yet still, what is more big government than, like, curtailing a woman's right to choose? Tommy Tuberville has no experience prior to this. He was a football coach for years in Alabama. He's no... experience in terms of leadership on a political circle. You know, so, you know, he is just hating on women. He's not giving women the rights that they deserve. And it's very debilitating that a man like Tuberville, you know, has so much power, has so much clout. He just came in there, for God's sake. And,
he's causing more damage than just this abortion issue and the people that are resigning. He is also making it awful darn difficult for a woman to even think about joining. And women do have a purpose in the military.
Yes, they do.
Some gals can outmaneuver, and I mean, there are gals that have ended up passing the Ranger training. And then today I think of my friend who I feel died in vain. He was in one of the towers. He was working for he was working one of the top floors for an commercial art enterprise where they do the commercials and stuff for New York. A commercial art agency. He survived, but he wished he hadn't. His lungs from the fuel were so scarred that the couple years that he lived in excruciating pain.
I mean, the last that are still suffering too, and they're still dying from that day.
Yes, and they are still IDing remains. They announced today that they have ID'd two more remains, and the family, because it was so close to 9/11, said they didn't want the names released just yet.
So they're still
IDing remains. They have approximately 1,000 more remains that they need to ID. So that 3,000 some people can go up to 4,000 and maybe even higher. But, you know, I mean, what are we doing to this country? Are we leaving it wide open for this nonsense?
Well, yes, because of this. This is what Tommy
And that's the reason why I have to go out there in 2024 and give Democrats, you know, like 60 senators where they have a majority proof that can't filibuster anything that Democrats try to put through. And we need that to take back the House because it's of fundamental importance to get America moving forward. Republicans don't mean anything good. You know, if they don't get their way, then they block everything, and that's not good. You know,
I'm sorry.
What was your experience on that day, September 11th? You saw it on TV, and then I got to Eric and asked me some questions.
My husband and I and a neighbor, we were drinking coffee at the time I was working. I was doing what is known as before and after care, the children that are dropped off before school starts. And the neighbor was working with me, and Jerry and I and the neighbor were drinking coffee, and the news is on, and all of a sudden we look up at the screen, and there is a plane crashing into the tower. And the person giving the news said, something happened. Maybe something happened to the pilot. Maybe the pilot had, you know, they're speculating at this point. So there really wasn't much that they were saying. And, you know, we're sitting there just dumbfounded that a commercial airline would crash into one of the towers. All of a sudden, we look up, and this is about 20 minutes later, another plane crashes in the other tower. We couldn't believe our eyes. We just sat there. We absolutely could not believe our eyes.
Yeah, it was shocking.
I mean, we witnessed it on TV. It was almost like being there.
Yeah.
September 11th, I relive that morning, and I wasn't there. This upsets me by seeing it on TV. What did it do to the people of New York? How many people suffered? I remember going back to the before care a couple days later, and we had the children outside This was in the afternoon after school was out, and a plane was overhead, and one of the boys start running like mad to the school. And I said, where are you going? And he said, they're coming after us.
Yeah.
So children themselves listening
mm-hmm.
to these broadcasts were,
mm-hmm.
you know, they were also traumatized. And this little boy was he was really scared.
Oh,
and
yeah.
then now I think about these children doing these damn gun drills.
Yeah, I know. That's scary, too.
These children are there to learn to read, write, and know the proper history of this country, not the colorful history that the Republicans want to teach them. They are to learn the truth, and they are to be able to sing and dance and have gym and have music and draw their pictures, not have drills for an active shooter. I'm sorry, I regressed. The 9/11 brought this on me thinking about the children. The little boy that was traumatized because 9/11, how many children going to school are traumatized? And children don't say anything. They don't say anything. They hold this in.
A lot of them don't. No, a lot of them don't.
Mm-hmm.
They do hold it in.
Mm-hmm. So, Eric, what was your experience like on that day?
You know what?
Mm-hmm.
To tell you the truth, when I had heard about it, it was—I mean, it was a little unbelievable to say the least. I mean, it's—you know—I pretty much agree with what Elaine said. I mean, there's no—I mean, just what was going on through the minds of the kids and parents and teachers and everybody else when that all went down and that all happened. I think the main positive effect of it was great vast majority of the country, you know, came together and united like never before. And it's like, you know, we have blacks, whites, Mexicans, foreigners. I mean, everybody just came together, men and women, every adult, children just came together and said, yeah, this could have been anybody here. I mean, we lost almost 3,000 lives that day. And it's, it was unfortunate to say the least, but that's why you have to cherish the people you have while you have them. Because, I mean, anything could happen to this country. Anything could happen to us. Any war could start. I mean, anything could just go off. There is just no telling.
Yep.
Eric, you know what's so sad? I also remember the bombing of the FBI by Timothy McVeigh. I remember seeing the pictures and the parents talking about their children in that building that they dropped off at nursery school. I've lived through that. I've lived through John F. Kennedy, watching TV where Lee Harvey Oswald is being walked through the hallway. They're going to arrest him, and a man comes up to him and shoots him. I saw it right there on TV. So I've lived through that one. I've lived through the bombing of the FBI. I've lived through the bombing of the Twin Towers. And that day also, it was like chills. Then they're talking about the Pentagon. Then they're talking about the other plane that crashed. And nobody knew why the other plane crashed until later, when we found out that the people decided that this plane, they were going to die anyways, that this plane was not going to reach its destination.
Absolutely. They were heroes on that plane. Absolute heroes. That was pitiful.
I don't think anybody in such a short time should have to live through those three things. I grew up hearing about Pearl Harbor, so now that adds on to it. I heard about that, but these others, I feel like I've experienced them through our TV, our media, and our home.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when Jack Ruby walked up to Harvey Oswald and shot him right there. This was about 11:30 at night. Hadn't been married that long. Jerry and I are sitting there. We couldn't believe our eyes. We had just witnessed a murder.
Yeah, it's amazing. It is amazing.
And you know, and today my heart just kept going out to the children that have to practice these damn drills.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Sad.
Yes. 515-605-9802 is the number to call. And we're going to take our next call from Michigan. I think it's Susan waiting online. This is the Bullhorn speech by then President George W. Bush. This is about 9/11 happened. Work together and come together.
You're breaking up.
Okay.
Yep, there's a little bit of a breaking up going on over there.
Yeah, something's going on. Susie, are you on the line?
I'm still on the line.
Yep, same here.
Sounds like a duck.
Yeah, I don't know what to do. David? I don't know what's that.
Is David still there?
Hello?
Oh, I don't know. Something's going on with his phone or that side or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hear Eric. I hear Lori. I hear me.
I don't hear David.
David doesn't seem to be hearing us.
Yeah, something happened. Well, I'm going to talk about something else until David gets back, I guess. There were 30 Republicans who voted against money for 9/11 victims' families. Did everyone know that?
Oh, yeah, that's one where...
Yeah.
Now, wait, hold up a second. Hold up. Are you talking about recently, or are you talking about this was from a couple few
recently.
Years ago?
Recently.
Yeah.
Okay. I haven't heard about it, but it doesn't surprise me. But go ahead.
I believe it was, I'm trying to see the date. It doesn't
last
have a
year.
Date on.
Last year.
I think it was last year. Oh, actually it was in 22, 9/30 of 22.
Yeah.
30 Republicans and one Democrat opposed legislation Friday that provides compensation to the victims of 9/11 and their family members. The legislation was called the Fairness for 9/11 Families Act, advanced the House in a vote of 400-31, and a total of $3 billion increased compensation for 5,000 victims of 9/11, as well as their spouses and dependents, according to the New York Daily News. So I'm just going to read who the names of the ones that voted against compensating 9/11 victims. I just want everyone to know their names because I find it appalling that they would vote no to something like that. Okay, so
that
now
was
David said...
That was a renewal.
Yes.
Who is that the comedian that went to bat for him? Jesus, name escapes me.
You're talking about John Stewart.
Yes.
Yes,
he did. He had a fit. He went onto Capitol Hill and he spoke, and yes. But these are the 30 Republicans that voted against the 9/11 compensation for victims. Jody Arlington of Texas. Andy Biggs, Arizona, Dan Bishop, North Carolina, Lauren Boebert, Colorado, Mo Brooks, Alabama, Ken Buck, Colorado, Tim Burchett, Tennessee, Michael Cloud, Texas, Andrew Clyde, Georgia, James Comer, Kentucky, Dan Crenshaw, Texas, Warren Davidson, Ohio, Louis Goldmert, you guys know who he is, right? Texas. Mark Green.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Glenn, oh, David's back. Glenn Grossman, mm-hmm. Wisconsin. Angie Harris, Maryland. Diana Harshbarger, Tennessee. Jody Heiss, Georgia. Lane Lutik-Meyer, Missouri. Thomas Massey, Kentucky. Greg Murphy, North Carolina. Troy Nels, Texas. Ralph Norman, South Carolina. Bill Posey, Florida. Tom Rice, South Carolina. John Rose, Tennessee. Chip Roy, Texas. Van Taylor, Texas. Michael Turner, Ohio. Daniel Webster, Florida. Oregon Congressman Kurt Schrader was the sole Democrat to oppose the measure. They went on to say, I voted no on H.R. 8987 because the government of Saudi Arabia, whose agents assisted the hijackers in the heinous plot, should pay into the 9/11 Victims Fund, not the United States taxpayers. Representative Tom Massey, a Kentucky Republican who opposed the legislation, wrote on Twitter that Friday. Really? And he thought, why didn't he go to Saudi Arabia and see if they could get money from them? You think they were going to pay for anything? Are you kidding?
Yeah, and also I'd like to say, a good shout out and, thank you to New York Governor Kathy Hochul for signing a piece of legislation to support 9/11 victims, first responders, and their loved ones.
Yep. Yeah. Absolutely. Because the suffering still goes on for a lot of them.
I'm sure she'll get reacted.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, ma'am.
Between the jet fuel and the asbestos, because the building was older, between the jet
mm-hmm.
fuel and the asbestos is what got
mm-hmm.
the first responders, which is what damaged their skin,
mm-hmm.
their eyes, their lungs, and that's
mm-hmm.
what gave so many people such horrible, horrible illnesses.
Mm-hmm.
So
it was the
jet fuel remnants and the asbestos from the building.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, so, breaking news, everybody. So, last night, Donald Trump held a fundraiser for Rudy Giuliani, $100,000
mm-hmm.
per plate, and only
mm-hmm.
10 people showed up.
Mm. Yep.
Yeah.
I heard 3 people, mm-hmm. but...
Okay.
Well,
I have some breaking news.
You know, we were talking about these polls. Well, it
mm-hmm.
was brought out that only 1,800 people were polled. And
yes.
the news media keeps
mm-hmm.
saying the country?
Yep.
Oh, baloney. But we have to
yep.
remember who the media is owned by. They're owned by Republicans,
mm-hmm.
all of them.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yes.
Well,
welcome, Susan from Michigan. Hello, Susan.
The 1,800 people do not represent how this country is going and what this country is thinking.
Yes,
yeah,
indeed. Not. Yes. Susan from
yep.
Michigan. Hello, Susan. Welcome to the
show. How
you
doing, Dave?
Good.
Dave,
so what was your experience? What was your experience September 11th day?
We just retired up here on Lake Michigan, and I was watching it on TV, and I couldn't believe what I saw. You know, I had visions of, Pearl Harbor and everything. What the hell's happening? First, like everybody else, they thought it was an accident that the plane crashed in, but the second one, and then you saw the Pentagon and everything, you just thought the world was coming to an end. My husband
mm-hmm.
and his buddy were out on the lake fishing, and I called him to let him know because they didn't have TV or radio on the boat, and he already got
mm-hmm.
a call from the daughter of the guy he was fishing with, and they just came in,
mm-hmm.
said, screw fishing, and they came in and watched TV. It was horrible. But today
mm-hmm.
in Traverse City, the Metro Fire Department had a service at a memorial park built around a piece of bent steel beam from the North Tower. And the fire chief, they got the piece, and they said, you can have this if you build a memorial around it and never forget. And the Traverse City Fire Department said they never forgot. what they did today, the fire chief said they made a promise to continue to remember with compassion, devotion, and honor those who gave their ultimate sacrifice and those who were innocently taken away from us. And then he said, you saw the huge outpouring today that shows we are never going to forget so many lives that were lost that day senselessly. And there was a crowd there, and it was raining, and they were singing and ringing the bell and talking about it. And they have a round brick patio-like, and then the beams in the middle, and they have names around the on the bricks. Not as, you know, as many, but some of them had ties to Michigan, so those names were on there. But, yeah, it was a solemn thing. It was on TV today. They showed it on the news, and nobody's forgotten.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, go ahead, Eric.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, Susie, have we talked on here before? I can't remember.
Yeah, she
has. I call in every once in a while.
Okay, okay. Yeah, it's good to hear from you again. I know that Elaine and a couple of the others are regular callers. Are you here in Michigan?
Yeah, I'm in south of Traverse City, Frankfort.
Okay, okay. I'm in Wayne County. I'm in West.
Yeah,
Lansing.
I used to be from there. I was
born. So, as you might remember, in case you didn't know, I'm a precinct delegate and trustee with the Michigan Democratic Party. So, I mean, one of my things is obviously, you know, they might have mentioned I do a YouTube channel. I talk about Democratic accomplishments, promote Democratic candidates. So if you have, you know, any candidates up there who you feel I should reach out to and I can get them on a live stream video to help promote them, you know, feel free to give my information to them. They can reach out to me whenever they want.
Okay, I do go to our local Democratic office. They're kind of quiet now. Nothing's happening there. But when it gets closer to election, I'm going to get involved.
Okay, and like I said, of course, they'll tell you that I'm always involved. So, you know, if you need any pointers or tips, you know, just come to me, and I'll do my best to help.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
I will.
We have to all work together. It's really
we
important.
Do.
Yeah. Have to, as I always say, we have to continue to emphasize the importance and the accomplishments of the Biden-Harris White House.
Yeah. And this election, Eric and Susie and Elaine and David, is, we all know this is an election that is a could be a game changer if we do not win it for the whole country. And it'll change everyone's lives, not for the better. And we all know that. But I hope that other people become informed and understand what's happening in the undercurrent. And
I know.
I try to write some
letters to the editor. Our little county paper wouldn't take some of the political stuff I was saying, even though they were benign. They didn't want to write it at the time. But our Traverse paper takes more of that stuff, so I plan to get involved. I used to write for the Detroit News State page way back when. So I hope to get some articles in and, you know, beat the bushes.
Yeah, that's what we all have to do.
Yeah, you can't sit down on this one. This is too important.
No. No,
our whole country depends on this. Our democracy depends on this.
The world depends on this.
That is the thing we have to stress, because I don't think there are enough people that understand what is happening in this country. We have an undercurrent of MAGA Trump supporters that would like to do nothing but basically just turn over our government into a fascism. That's what
exactly.
They want.
Exactly.
If you're paying attention, you can hear it on a daily basis, but you have to pay attention. It doesn't take a lot of time to understand what's happening. And, you know, this is why we do this show. because we care. I care. I care about this country. I care about the future of, you know, my family in this country. I care, you know, and that's why I'm here doing this. That's why I write my blog. That's why we're here. And people just have to understand that we're almost at a crossroads, because the people that want to take over this country are not good people. They are people that have no interest in the American people. They only have interest in themselves and what they can attain from, you know, winning this election.
And it's all about the power and the money.
Yes,
you know that.
And
they're backed by corporations
and
people with money and far right, and they're, you know, tax breaks for the rich and screw the public.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and it's just horrendous. I don't understand how people can't be up in arms about this. My dad said, you don't accomplish nothing until there's blood in the streets. I mean, that's when they had, you know, the riots during the 1920s and stuff like that. And when us women got abortion rights, and when we try to get equal rights, which never ever passed.
Yeah.
All that. We can't stop. We got to keep on going. We're going to hell right now. The whole world is watching the United States crumble, and Russia and China, and they're all feeding it on the internet, and idiots look at that stuff and believe it.
Yep. I agree.
You know what's funny? Because, you know, here's the thing. I just messaged somebody on Instagram earlier, and, you know, this was just a couple hours ago, and I haven't got a response yet. There's a guy who's a co-host for a podcast that I used to watch, and now, you know, I had stopped watching it because it just went strictly anti-Democrat. And the guy was asking, well, what has one – he said, name one thing that Biden has done good that's better than what the last president did. And I messaged him on here, and it's funny how people always tell me that I can't name one good thing that he's done. Well, I have a list of at least 20, 25. I think one list I actually had closer to 30 things that he's done.
Mm-hmm.
And for people who are, and anybody who's a conservative or a right winger or anti Biden who's listening to this, who is curious about that, or who may not know, or who's waiting for somebody to answer that. So that's why I'm here. So I said to this guy, I said, okay, so you asked what has Biden done that's better than Trump, right? I said, well, okay. You got the American Rescue Plan Act. You have the Inflation Reduction Act. You have the capping of the cost of insulin at $35 a month. You have the PACT Act. You have the CHIPS Act. You have the $15 an hour that went to federal workers and contractors. The student debt reduction that canceled $10,000 to $20,000 per borrower, which brought the student debt from $1.6 trillion to $1.6 trillion. He helped over 8 million Americans with struggling medical debt, that brought the medical debt from $200 billion to $88 billion. $500 million were invested into HBCUs. The Paris Climate Agreement is reinstalled. 13 million jobs have been added to this economy. Over 800,000 manufacturing jobs came back to the U.S. $100 stimulus checks were cut. COVID relief package. The expansion of the unemployment benefits. The re-enrollment of over 16 million Americans back onto health care. The 500 migrant children who were reunited with their families. The bipartisan gun reform. The massively reduced drone war, the child tax credit, and I think I already included the extended unemployment. I said all these right here. You're telling me he even went more to the left on some things than even other Democratic presidents did.
Oh, yeah.
And he just gave a pay raise to construction workers who will see – there's millions of construction workers who are going to see a raise in their checks, and then also expanding the overtime pay from people who made $35,000 a year or less to $55,000 a year or less. I said, so you're telling me that the last guy has managed to do something that tops all of that. And if anybody here is a conservative listening to this, if you tell me I'm wrong, and show me how. So far, I haven't seen that, which is why I lay that out every single time.
You know,
the only thing the other guy did was put us in debt for $2.7 trillion. By giving it to the big corporations, that's the only damn thing he did.
You know,
well,
Eric,
you know what?
It gets me.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know what gets me, Eric, is that coach that you were talking about, that you messaged, that has, does he have a show? Is that what it is, or a podcast?
Yeah, it's on YouTube. He co-hosts the Jimmy Dore show, and I actually used to watch him sometimes.
Okay.
He was actually critical of both parties, but he switched solely to everything is mostly just anti-Democrat.
Okay,
and so I have to speak.
Is it because they get, you know, people love controversy. People love.
They
like to dig in and get the dirt. Is that what it is? I mean, what is it?
Here's the best way. Here's the best way I can answer that question for anybody who's wondering. Now, if you had asked me about a week ago, I probably wouldn't have had much of an answer, but I was actually listening to a debate between two left-wingers who I really enjoy watching. So I listened to Crystal Ball and Kyle Kulinski debate with Breonna Joy Gray, and they were debating about the whole thing about how we should vote in the next election. And I have to say it was probably the best debate I've heard in a long time. It was very passionate. It was very substantive. It was real. It was honest, and it was meaningful. And I'll tell you this. I think the main reason why a lot of people on that side feel that way is because the expectations that they set for themselves, now this is a point that I will say is halfway legitimate because everybody has a different expectation. And so there's a number of people who did not vote for Biden in 2020 that expected nothing of him. And now that he's done these things and now they give him credit for it because they're like, oh, I didn't even think he would do that. The student debt reduction or the $1,400 checks or pulling out of Afghanistan. You know, a lot of the people who are saying, well, we elected him because we wanted things like the Medicare for all, the free college, you know, basically the Bernie Sanders platform, which I completely support because I voted for Bernie in the too. But the thing about it is people have to – if the choice is between massive positive change and incrementalism, then, yes, I choose the massive positive change. But if your two choices in an election are somebody who's going to give you slow but sure progress versus no progress at all, then you have to be – I would morally take the option that gives us slow but sure progress because it means we're moving in the right direction. And so for a lot of these people, they feel that he's just not moving fast enough, which might be true on some things, but overall he has surpassed a lot of expectations. And I think the more we continue to put our foot up the Democrats and tell them, like, hey, this is what you said you'd do, you have to do it. And they saw that when they did things that they did, like the student debt reduction, the numbers go up. And so the more they continue to do that, the less Republicans will be able to argue against it. That's why they can't argue against people like Gavin Newsom for the amazing things he did in California. That's why his approval rate skyrocketed 65%. And so that's the answer to that question. That's why they feel that way, is because they set their expectations too high to a level for a guy who they pretty much already established they weren't going to vote for him anyway, and they treat him like most of us treat the Republicans. That's what that comes down to.
The thing is, Eric, Trump has been indicted 4 times. How can they still support someone like that?
Well, no, this argument.
91 felonies, though.
Well, hold on a second. Hold on. Let me say this right quick. That argument, Lori, that's not coming from the people who support Trump. That's coming from the people who call themselves the leftists who are not going to vote for either candidate and they're going to vote third party. That's where they're coming from.
But
the Trump supporters,
no,
on the other hand, we already know where they're going. But go ahead.
You know what I'm saying? The thing that bothers me the most are these people that still believe that Trump is going to save this world. I see them interviewed all the time. It's insanity. And that they get too much press. They get too much press. I think that what's happened also is that we're in this big bubble, and, you know, every single day it's Trump this for 7-8 years now. It's just been nothing but Trump 24/7. And President Biden is quietly, calmly doing his job every single day. He was on a weekend of tours. No one even knew that he was going. He went to the G20 and no one even knew he was up for 30 some hours straight. And today he's in Alaska. But do we pay attention to that? No, because he's quietly doing his job. So everyone is paying attention because the media is sucking everything out of us because of Trump. And that man deserves to rot in hell. That's where he deserves to be right now. Not
well,
on the news.
The whole thing about it is this. the main thing that's upsetting me about a lot of the media right now is, and I know people here probably feel the same way, or I've debated with Democrats and Republicans about this one. I think what put a little bit of a taint, a little bit of a stain on CNN, and I've been watching CNN for years, and I still watch them occasionally, but
I don't mind.
I think when they gave Trump the town hall, that kind of gave a lot of the Democrats a different perception of them. And I understand that you're supposed to give all the candidates a little bit of attention. This is the problem, is that a lot of the media gave Trump too much attention in 2016 because, obviously, as we know, he's incompetent and he's a moron and all this stuff. So they underestimated him massively, and that's how he got lucky enough with the Electoral College. You know, the whole thing about it is that they are, I think, effectively embarrassing and basically crushing people like Vivek and people like Ron DeSantis and all them. And basically they're crushing them and they're calling them out rightfully so. They're not really pressing Trump in the same way that they used to or that they should be doing, because by giving him a platform, that means that in a way it's almost indirectly helping him, because they have to remember that giving him too much attention is part of what got him at the top in the first round. It's like a lot of them haven't seemed to have learned that lesson. They could be spending a lot of that time putting Biden and Kamala and Pelosi and Schumer and, like, top Democratic officials that are on there to talk about the accomplishments that the current presidency has done, because a lot of Americans, stated earlier, are still not aware, and that's why I talk about it on this show all the time, and that's why I always post about it.
We must be doing something right. I heard something over the weekend, and I quickly hit the record button so I could replay it. The Republicans want to change the term pro-life because it's not effective anymore, that the lefties have changed the meaning. So we must be doing something right by pointing out to them that they are not pro-life. I'm just giving one example. We must be doing our job finally.
Mm-hmm.
The Republicans want to change the term pro-life, but they haven't come up with a word yet.
There is no word.
Asshole.
I
want to
know.
Asshole.
Can you answer
a good
question
word for them,
for me?
Assholes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Can you add a question? Don't Republicans have Social Security and Medicare? Aren't they afraid that the Republicans are going to cut it for them, too, and not just us Democrats? That doesn't make any sense to me.
No.
And when they're going to shut down the government, nobody's going to get their Social Security check. People are going to be – the Army isn't going to get paid. Everybody isn't going to get paid. It should be Congress be first not getting paid.
But
they want to shut down the government. Does that make sense? Are they for that?
Well, they're stupid.
Yeah,
go ahead, Eric.
I mean, the whole thing is insane.
That's a good question. And it's hard for me to answer that one, because I'll say this. The problem is, the thing that upsets me more, when I look at Republicans and conservatives who oppose things like the expansion of Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, it's already frustrating and irritating enough to know that most Republican politicians, governors, senators, congresspeople, presidential candidates are opposed to that. The thing that upsets me more is that a lot of Republican voters feel the same way. But not only do I not know the full answer to why they feel that way, if I didn't know any better, I'd say they probably don't even know why they feel that way. This is why a lot of debates that take place on television, they're not pressing them hard enough on the right questions, which is why I say that when they do these debates in the primaries between the presidential candidates and the governor's candidates and the candidates in other areas, what they need to do is they need to divide it into at least three separate debates. Here's where they're going to debate about health care. Here's where they're going to debate about education. Here's where they're going to debate about wages. And, you know, and the whole thing about it is that I feel that once a discussion on that thing is very, very well laid out between the left and the right, that will also help more and more voters to understand what's going on, which way they prefer to lean. And to me, I've told many conservatives this, and I've had many debates with Republican candidates about this. I said, you do understand that when the government talks about expanding Social Security and Medicaid and Medicare, I said, you do know that they're not just saying, only for a certain demographic of people or only for a certain percentage of voters. They're not just talking about Democrats. Mm-hmm. They're not just talking about black people. They're not just talking about white people or trans or women. They're talking about this is what we're trying to do for everybody in the country. That's why President Obama said that there are no red states and there's no blue states because we're supposed to be the United States. And that is perfectly right, and nobody should be able to argue against that. And so I tell conservatives, I said, if this is what you care for, if you want your kids to be safe in school, then you should support gun reform. You should support the bipartisan gun reform that Biden had passed. I think there should have been more to it, but it was definitely a good start.
And you should be against the voucher system because there's separation of church and state, and I shouldn't pay for private schools.
Do you all remember when President Obama passed the Affordable Care Act, and all the Republicans were up in arms because they said that they were going to have death squads, you know? Do you remember that?
Death panels. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Yeah, I also remember when Ben Carson.
Are there death panels? Does anyone see any? I don't see any death panels. And we have the Affordable Care Act. We've had it for years. And it's fun. And it's successful. So what is the problem? I think that the young people
Eric and everybody, you know what I think the problem is? Republican voters, because they're so uneducated and thus put party before country, they're told what to think, you know, because, you know, Eric's point where he was saying that, hey, Social Security is for everybody, black, white, Jewish, Hispanic, trans, women, everybody. So because they're so caught up in this partisan nonsense, you know, is the Republican leaders, you know, tell them what to think. And the demonized Democrats saying, oh, they're socialists, they're, you know, leftist, communist, fascist. Communist and fascism don't mix to begin with. Socialism is not communism. So, you know, with an uneducated populace, that Republican base, the voters who usually vote Republican, they have no critical thinking. And that's why they're against everything that the Republican Party is against now, because they don't have any level of critical thinking. They're stupid, basically.
They don't.
Well, you know what? The other thing that I would like to touch on that's actually relevant to that is I actually just had this debate with somebody on Facebook. Now, this guy doesn't support any political party. I don't think he even votes. I'll tell you that. So me and him always debate and argue about this whole thing about the party labels and him saying, you know, he basically – it started off when he posted a picture of Michelle Obama. And he said, what words would you use to describe her? And, of course, most people on there said classy, elegant, intelligent, educated. Mm-hmm. You know, I said, you know, essentially the same thing. And then, so he asked me, he said, well, would you be saying that if she was a Republican? I said, well, that's hard to say. I mean, maybe. I'm not going to be the person to sit here and say that just because you are a Republican. I mean, not all of them have absolutely no class. Now, this argument goes into – because you've been brainwashed and you have a political party telling you how to think instead of think for yourself. I said, but here's the thing about that. Even if you were to take away the party labels, if you look at two candidates who clearly have opposing point of views, if one candidate is telling you that they want you to have better health care, they want you to afford health care, they want you to get a free education for community college, and they're going to give you another stimulus check, and they're going to raise your wages, and then you have the other candidate saying that they don't want any of those things, who do you think I'm voting for? I said, so what that right there is, it doesn't take much just to hear what the candidates are saying. And then once these people get into the government, whether it be federal government or state government, all you have to do is look at the way that they vote. And so, you know, when I look at somebody like a, I mean, I see people like, for example, I mean, you got Nancy Pelosi, who's been Speaker of the House four times, that, you know, for the most part, she's passed good things in the House, whether she was the one who introduced it or not. When you have things like the PACT Act and the American Rescue Plan and the COVID Relief Package and the Inflation Reduction Act, these things were introduced by Democrats, and every last one of them, for the most part, was voted against Republicans 95 to 99% of the time. And 95 to 99% Republicans vote against it. I said, so each party has their has a structure and a manifesto that basically says this is what we stand for. If you stand for this, you're with that party. If you stand for this, Now, I understand the argument that says that you can stand for something and still not be affiliated with a party. That's understandable. But what they have to remember is that just because you vote for a candidate, for a lot of people, it's not about the party. For a lot of people, it is, I'm voting for this candidate because they're clearly the better choice. So if Joe Biden and Donald Trump didn't have any labels to them, and I'm still listening to what they're saying, and I'm still judging them based upon the actions that they took while they were president, I can look at the list and clearly see that what Joe Biden has done is a lot better than most of what Trump has done. And so, therefore, between the two, Biden is the choice. And so I just tell people that. I said, this is not CNN or MSNBC telling me how to think or Biden or Trump telling me how to think. I'm just looking at what these people are saying and doing. It doesn't get any easier than that.
Mm-hmm. I've got a little thing that I'm going to throw at you folks. I feel that the minority hardcore Republican is the religious Republican. They vote on how government is going to dictate and cram their views of religion down our throat. And this is going to come back to bite them in the ass, because people coming to this country are very hardcore conservative religious people with a different slant on religion. And if they don't stop it, it is going to come and bite us in the ass. That is your hardcore conservative religious. I think your other Republican, like Eric is pointing out, facts. Those are the people that are going to quietly go to the polls, tell their neighbor they're a Republican, and they're going to vote Democrat.
Well, even preachers are coming out and talking against what the Republicans are doing. You know, that isn't help the poor, the lesser of us, what it says in the Bible. No, they're giving money to the rich and make them richer and themselves, because the rules in Congress are in corporate favors, you know. They should not have lobbying and all that crap. And they should have the same insurance that they give the people. They should not have pensions. They're in office for 4-8 years, and then they have money up the wazoo for the rest of their lives, unlike the rest of us. So
Amen.
It is not. Yeah. So, you know, it isn't fair. It isn't right. And something's got to change.
It's up to us out here to keep squawking. If we don't say nothing, they're going to keep both sides are going to pad their nest. They're going to have fur lined nests.
The thing that gets me a little bit more is, so there's a couple things about that too. Number one, and I had this argument with somebody not too long ago as well. And see, usually this is the type of stuff I can't stand to argue about. But because a couple of y'all had just brought it up, that, I mean, this whole thing with the – this is why they say religion and politics shouldn't go together, and this is why you keep it. Because the thing about it is there's this stigma. There's this unspoken rule, this stereotype that it has to be, if you are a Christian, then you have to be a conservative, and if you're a liberal, then you have to be an atheist. Well, you know what? There is such a thing as an atheist conservative, and there's also such a thing as a liberal Christian. Now, I'm under the category of Christian and liberal, and so I will tell you that I may not be a Bible expert, but I will say that I do know that it says in there that you know, anybody who is a believer in God would see that God wants us to love and care for one another and help one another. Well, here's the thing about it. When people make the argument to say that the Democrats are actively pushing God out of the schools and pushing God out of the, you know, well, when we exercise policies like all the ones that I just listed, those are things that objectively and empirically help other people, okay? It doesn't mean that every single person's life is going to be perfect. Somebody's still going to be struggling somewhere. But when you talk about things like, hey, we need to cap these costs at X amount a month because people are struggling, they need to afford something. We need to help with student debt. We need to help with medical debt, credit card debt, auto debt, mortgage debt, school lunch debt. When you give kids free lunches at school, that helps them. When you cancel people's student debt, that helps them. So now they're not burdened with this 10, 20, 30, 50,000, whatever they pay. Now they can actually afford to do some other stuff. When we talk about wanting to have universal health care via single-payer system, that helps people. A free education helps people. So again, that's not to say that there aren't some extremists who just want to sit there and say, yeah, let's get rid of this altogether. But you know what? A lot of those extremists that the conservatives are referring to are not the majority of our party. So therefore, the things that we're pushing are contrary to their statement of, well, this is strictly anti-God, because they have not found a way to put those two links together. And so that's why I get tired of arguing with them about that. And if they want to believe it, I can't help them.
We've got to keep talking to them and talking, and we have to keep pushing the media and tell that we've got to start doing the narrative. And I think the Republicans realize that the Democrats have learned that we have to start leading the narrative on the right track. Now, I heard a gentleman at a fair. He was all upset about the government in his life. The only example he gave was his gun.
Mm-hmm.
That is the only example he gave, because the Republicans pushed that narrative. And then I stood there and listened to some other people come, and they got a lot of people are talking politics that didn't talk politics before in some crazy places. And this one woman, she started talking about God, God, God. And she said, I am a Christian. I am a Republican conservative. So I could see what was going on. The narrative was pushed at two types of people, and it's been successful. It is up to us to unsuccess it. I don't know how to put it. We have got to keep the narrative up and explain to
You know what?
You have children that need to eat. You need to go to the hospital. You need your roads. They pushed the narrative. Now it's time for us to push it.
Well, you know
what? And you're still
going
to have hardcore because you still have people that believe in Hitler.
You know what? Right quick. I agree with that, and I do want to throw this in right quick. The best answer that I have for that is the way that we do that is by doing exactly what I stated before, and that is the only way that we can – there is a way, and I don't know how fast or effective it could be, but in the same way that we pressure and push our politicians and leaders to do the right thing, we have to exercise that within the media. Now, obviously, Fox News is no hope, so that's not even in question. Mm-hmm. But as far as CNN, as far as MSNBC, NBC, ABC, CBS, the New York Times, the Huffington Post, the LA Times, Washington Post, you know, we need to get them to and get more people there who are columnists. That's why I have email contact to some of those people who work at some of those areas. I actually spoke on the phone with a lady who's a staffer for the Los Angeles Times a couple of years ago. So what we need to do is the problem with the Democrats is, as we said before, they might be great on policy, but they're not always great at the messaging. And so the thing about it is that's why we need more people, more real Democratic activists and Democratic Biden-Harris supporters, Whitmer supporters, Newsom supporters to get up on camera, get on CNN, get on MSNBC, and talk about the accomplishments and the good things that these people have done. Watch some Republican go up there and try to argue it. You don't have to make them look stupid. They're going to make themselves look stupid because they don't know what they're talking about, and they're there to copy a narrative. That's the thing about it. We just have to get on camera. We just have to get more people to share the stuff. That's why I had all of you share the Biden-Harris accomplishment list. And I've been saying for a long time, I need to get on CNN or MSNBC. If somebody could help me do it, I'd gladly do it. It just has to happen. We have to do better controlling the narrative, and we got to get these people on track and get them to focus on the right things.
There's simple things we can do. When we know that somebody is going to be interviewed and they're going to be pushing their agenda that is wrong, we need to get somebody to stand in the background with a sign. We've started doing that. I've noticed that. Somebody in the background will have a sign. Go to jail.
Yes.
120 to life. That is how we message. We do little things. These little things become big things.
We
all can do it. From John Q. Citizen all the way up to Eric and David and Lori, we can do it.
I feel like I should send an email to CNN and NBC.
Yeah. See, you're good on the computer. I wish I knew how to do that stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, like I said, and that's why I do a YouTube show where I take each of those.
Mm-hmm. I truly believe.
I take each of those policy points that I listed. I've taken a lot of those, and I'm still in the process of doing it. So I took the American Rescue Plan Act. I took the Inflation Reduction Act and the COVID Relief Package. And so I took those three, and I did three separate videos on them and said, okay, here's the American Rescue Plan Act of 2021, I think that was. And so I did a video mm-hmm. talking about what was in that bill and how much money was invested into, you know, A, B, C, in these different areas, how much money went to this state. I did the same thing with the Inflation Reduction Act, which covered the cost of insulin being capped at $35 a month. I did the COVID relief package that Biden also signed. And so these are things that I'm working on doing right here. And if more get more Democrats to see this channel and subscribe to it, obviously, I may not be the number one messenger, but I consider myself to be one of many. So that's why I tell people, subscribe to the show, follow me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. That's what we're here for. We're here to promote and boost the accomplishments of the Democrats. My Governor Whitmer, I see that she's on track to do the same thing. She actually just stated that she was getting ready to release a plan on how to boost the Democrats for 2024. Mm-hmm. We still await to see what that plan includes. And so once it gets out there, I'll be talking about that too.
Well, I mean, Susie's lucky. She's got news media there where she can write letters to the editor. We haven't got anything in the metropolitan area. There's no such thing as a newspaper in our area.
Well,
down
Detroit
here.
News is still out, isn't it, in the Free Press?
Well, yeah, you still got the Detroit Free Press there.
The people that take the news in the Free Press is so minuscule that it
yeah.
Are you serious?
Not.
Oh,
I'm
my
serious.
God, I live for my paper. I get them delivered every day.
Your area still gets a small, what they call a small town rag, and everybody looks forward to reading it.
Everyone goes online.
You're in the metropolitan area. You don't see newspapers anymore. You see everybody
mm-hmm.
with their nose in their phone.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
True.
Laurie, am I right or am I wrong on
nope.
what happens down here?
Yeah, absolutely.
Everybody's got their nose in their phone. You go to a doctor's office. I will pick up the General Motors Times because I like reading from a paper
mm-hmm.
and being able to put
yeah.
it down and rest my eyes for a second. But
yeah.
I'm a rare one. If we had newspapers, I'd be reading it. They just aren't like they are up there in Traverse City. So, Susie, you keep writing your letters. You know, it takes the whole state of Michigan to go blue.
Yep.
Well, we got to get the word out and protect our voting rights. You know, Michigan is safe because we have Benson and stuff, but other states are gerrymandering and taking votes away and closing voting places, and the lines are a mile long, and you can't get a drink of water while you're in line or go take a pee while you're waiting 3 hours to go vote. That's ridiculous. They've got to do something about that, too, because they're trying to stop the Democrats from voting. You know, that's what they're doing.
That is why we have to have universal mail-in voting. That's what we have to have.
Exactly.
Universal.
And, you know, it was stupid. Who would do voting on Tuesday? You got to leave work to go vote?
Yeah.
Like the boss is going to let you off, right?
No. Absolutely. We need to just
My proposal, why not have presidential election voting day on President's Day? That was so appropriate. You know,
of course it would.
It would be easier for people.
So
you know, but President's Day is usually like 2 weeks
after.
Yeah,
but people work on President's Day. You got to have a national holiday for that. But like Laurie said, it should be mail-in ballots. That's it. You're done.
I mean,
I've worked the polls 3 times. They don't need me there anymore, so I didn't do it the last time. But it was getting scary just being in the polls.
There's another idea, and I'm pretty sure I'm probably the only person who's thought of this. And again, feel free to laugh if it sounds incredibly silly, but you know, because we already have, and I know people have talked about the idea of having Election Day being a national holiday. I actually have something to put
mm-hmm.
on top of that. We need a day before Election Day that we can have that day off too, because that way we can, it gives people time to vote before then. you know, you vote before Election Day, you vote on Election Day, and then also, as you had pointed out, we'll continue the mail-in votes. And the no-reason absentee, which we have in Michigan, I don't know if every state has that. I mean, I'm assuming that a lot of the deep South, deep red states don't have that.
Yeah.
We need to – Election Day has to be a national holiday, and it has to take place the day of and the day before Election Day. And then that way
Here's
we don't
the
have
problem
to wait
with that,
entire
though.
Week. We don't have to wait an entire week for the election results to be done like we did in 2020. So, you know, we have to do that. And to answer the question, to respond to people who always sit there and say, well, why do I, you know, you're harsher with the Republicans than you are the Democrats, and both parties have problems. Here's the thing. I'm tougher on the Democrats in the sense that we have to get better with their messaging. With me being a precinct delegate and a trustee within the party, that means that I have a little bit more leverage and a little more power and impact over them. So that's why I've also compiled
a
list of – Yes.
Here's my objection to that is that that gives you a four-day weekend. People won't vote. They'll go out of town. They'll go on vacation. They'll travel. They'll do stuff. That's why Monday or Election Day is always a Tuesday, not a Monday, because they will do other stuff that's more fun and won't vote. And if you give them Monday and Tuesday off, all the RVs in the world will be on the road and voting will drop.
Well, but you know what? But
you can't do that.
But hold on.
They have to go to work the day before.
Right. But here's the thing about that. That's why with the inclusion of the mail-in votes and voting early, even if they were to take the four-day vacation, they could still have time to go into their clerk's office on that Thursday or Friday, go there. All they have to do is sit for 10 minutes or less, fill out their ballot, vote for who they're going to vote for, turn it in right there, and then that's their vote in right there. And they don't have to worry about, okay, I mailed it and it got lost or somebody stole it or whatever the case might be. I mean, there is an advantage to it in a way. I'm not saying that that's an illegitimate point, but this is just ideas I'm thinking of right here.
The way this country is built, giving days off to employers, giving their employees days off is a miracle.
Yeah.
You know, and then the next thing would be they'd want to be paid for it. Oh, my God. Another day of you know, working, not working, but getting paid? How do we do that? The employers will have a heart attack. I mean, that's just the way it is in this country. It really is. And that's
well,
why
I think
I
that
feel,
Election Day should be a
that's
national
why I
paid
feel,
holiday.
That's why
well,
I feel that.
That's why Election Day should be a national paid holiday.
It should. And yeah, I'm not disagreeing with you, Eric. I'm just saying that in this country, you know how greedy everybody is. And the employers won't go for that. They just won't. I mean, it only makes sense. Whatever we want that makes sense, we won't get. That's just how it works. And that's why I feel, because the polls have also become, in my eyes, a place that can be not dangerous, but intimidating maybe because of what's happening in this country right now. And why not just mail in your votes? People can work there and count the votes. And what is, you know, it'd be so much easier. So much easier. But
I don't
understand.
That's
why they won't do it. It's too damn easy and it'll work.
I don't
so
understand
easy.
Why other states have early voting a week ahead of time, and it doesn't seem to be a problem. Why can't we have early voting Friday, Saturday, Sunday,
year,
Monday? And if you want to go to the polls, you can go on Tuesday. There are some people that still think that they should go to the polls.
No, I understand. I understand that theory, you know, about going to the polls. I get it. But I'm just talking about it being easier. It's just simple. Throw it in your mailbox. You're done.
Well, some places like New Mexico, we have early voting for 2 weeks before.
Pardon?
And I've worked at polls many years, and people show up, particularly if it's on their way to or from work. They get it out of the way. I always vote early because it's just much simpler than waiting for the crowds.
Okay, you're what state?
New Mexico.
New Mexico.
New Mexico. And you're voting us 2 weeks ahead of time.
Yeah.
That's you know, I was thinking
Monday,
Michigan
Saturday,
have Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. And you can have your mail-in ballots and you could go vote early.
We have it Monday through Saturday for 2 weeks ahead of time. Then we close on that Monday, and then on Tuesday, Election Day, we're open.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you don't have lines out the door. People don't have to wait for, you know, hours and hours out in the sun and stuff. Although in November, it frankly can be quite cold. But, yeah, it's no problem. I worked it at the University of New Mexico last time, and it was in the student union, and so many people go there and so many people work there. We were busy, hundreds of people every single day.
It's got to be easier for people
a lot of people
like that.
Don't go to vote depending on the weather. Now, I have stood at polls passing out literature on voting day where it's rain, sleeted, snowed, and freezing rain all on Tuesday. You'd be surprised how many people don't show up.
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
There's
that's
no reason why we can't have a little bit of early day voting, even in Michigan.
I still like mail-in ballots. I don't care.
Well, I believe in mail-in ballots also, but there are some people that want to cast their own ballot in the machine. So.
I oblige
so we can get the people out there.
I just think that easier and not having to get in your car, or not having to worry about driving there, not having to worry about standing in line, none of that stuff. Not being intimidated.
Plus, with only one day like that, you know, you got the people on long shifts, like nurses working 10 hours or doctors and other people in factories working the night shifts and stuff like that. And we need longer than one day to vote.
Amen.
And that early voting is perfect. And if that doesn't fit, you can get your mail-in ballot if you want.
But that is why in Michigan that everyone gets mail-in ballot.
No. You
have to apply for it.
To the house and you request a mail-in ballot.
No,
it is not automatic.
No, she changed that. Do you remember?
Yeah, once you sign up, then you can get it all the time. But you got to sign up for it. You got to ask.
You
don't just get it in the mail.
You get a card about, I think it's about a month ahead of time, and you sign it that you want a mail-in ballot. And then then your mail-in ballot comes to you.
Right, because the way it was before, you had basically an excuse to have a mail-in ballot. So now you can have a mail-in. All you have to do is call your township or your city. You can have it mailed to you.
Yeah,
right.
You got to be registered. They got to make sure you're registered and check your signature and all that stuff.
They will.
And then you
can
get it all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. And that, to me, is a simple solution. But, you know, some people, I guess, like standing at the polls. I don't. So.
Especially with COVID.
We wouldn't be standing at the polls if we had Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday, and Tuesday. That's
well,
not
that's
a big
never...
deal.
We know that'll never happen. No, it'll never happen. Never.
I've got a quick, I don't know what time it is. I've got a quick thing I want to throw out there to everybody. And we talk about mental illness all the time and the, you know, it's just a bunch of rhetoric. Mental illness is the invisible illness. If you have cancer or deformities or Parkinson's disease, it's visible. Now, mental illness is a strange disease, and not everybody is familiar with it. Most people don't want to acknowledge it. They'll turn away from a mental ill person just like they will somebody who's deformed. And this is something the banks are doing, and I want anybody out there that has had this problem to contact their representatives in Washington. A person who is mentally ill and happens to get irate on the phone with a bank. The bank is closing their account, collecting their checks, and the person has to wait 60 days to get their money. Now, let me give you an example of how this has happened. This particular person is getting two checks. One is from the government for problems. The other is the SSI. Because of mental illness, she is not very nice on the phone. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the person on the other end gets offended because they're a Christian and you can't talk to them that way.
Right.
So
right.
Her bank account is frozen.
Wow.
So for 60 days, this veteran who has served her time in the service for 60 days had no money because the bank is punishing her for being mean on the phone to the workers. I would like to know how many people out there have experienced this or their loved ones have experienced this. How dare the banks hold their checks for 60 days?
Is that even legal?
That's what I keep asking. Is it legal?
Yeah,
but they're doing it.
Switchboard. Capitol Hill switchboard number is 202-224-3121. Talk to U.S. Senator about what Elaine is speaking of.
I've called and nothing's happened yet. I am putting this message out because I know that there's other people this has happened to. Your loved one has got mental problems and they aren't thinking clearly. We've got to intercede for them and we have to contact Washington. What these banks are doing is wrong and it should be terribly illegal.
It should be.
Give somebody's checks.
Yeah, that's
but they
crazy.
Are. Now, eventually, and they don't even give you a time limit. Eventually, they're going to send you the check by mail. Is it registered mail? Mm-hmm. No, it's regular mail. Well, how do we know that the bank's going to send the checks? Well, you'll have to trust us. I know. I sent her and talked to the bank director. She turned her computer on and she said, well, this particular person was mean and nasty to the people on the phone. Oh, my.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my.
I don't care if the person used their password
in the book. You don't hold their money back.
No, it's not their money.
And that's what the banks are doing.
I never heard a thing like that. I used to work at a bank.
They're doing it, Susie. They're doing it. This is why I asked for this time to say something about it. And I know that it's not just happened to one of my loved ones. I know it's happening across the country.
At a whole bunch of different banks.
What I am asking people to do is intercede for your loved ones. And if the person who has problems, PSD or whatever problem it is, if this is happening to them, to please contact Washington about this. This is wrong.
I haven't either. The thing is, I have to have a loved one who has problems like this.
This is why I know about it.
Wow.
Yeah, we'll have to wrap up now. So we thank everybody, Elaine, Susie, and Eric in Michigan. Thank you so much for calling and making a contribution tonight.
Okay, have a good night.
Glad to hear from everybody.
Hey, wait a second. Wait, hold up a second. Hold on. Susie, what's your Facebook page in case I don't have you on there?
Pardon?
What's your Facebook page name?
I don't even know on Facebook. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. No problem. Okay, well, like I said, if you want any contact information to me, they have all my info. They can give it to you. They can give you my number.
Okay, I will.
My email, and my YouTube channel. Yes. Good to hear from you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Have a good night.
Yes.
Have a good night, everyone.
Thank you for the time to notify people what's going on.
Yeah.
Yes, ma'am. U.S. Capitol Hill switchboard number 202-224-3121. Ask them to stop the banks from freezing people's accounts. You know, because it's not right. This particular person served in the military, served in her country. She has PTSD, and, you know, it's just not right that we treat our veterans this way.
No,
we should stop
it's not
it.
Right,
stop
even
it.
If they aren't a veteran. If they have a disease, they have a disease.
Yep, I agree.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes. All right, so thank everybody for calling in tonight, and we'll see you again next week. Sunday and Monday, same time, 9:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Mountain Time. This has been Kitchen Politics 123 for Monday, September 11th, 2023, 22nd anniversary of 9/11, Season 5, Episode 32, a noun, a verb, and 9/11. That was a topic. So until next week again, we're glad everybody could share across social media and, you know, just talk to us on Facebook and what have you. Really appreciate your time. So I'm David Franklin in New Mexico. Good night, Lori.
Good night, David. And this is Lori Pekka from Michigan. Everyone have a good and safe evening. Bye now.
Friends of Scotland, I am William Wallace. William Wallace is 7 feet tall. Yes, I've heard. Killed men by the hundred. And if he were here, he'd consume the English with fireballs from his eyes and bolts of lightning from his arms. I am William Wallace. And I see a whole army of my countrymen here in defiance of tyranny. You've come to fight as free men. And free men you are. What will you do without freedom? Will you fight?
Against that?
No!
We will run!
And we will live. Aye. Fight and you may die. Run and you'll live. At least a while. I'm dying in your bed many years from now. Would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom?
In 100 years, the worst economic crisis since the Great Depression, but America fought back. Today, unemployment is at record lows. Our economy leading the world. Joe Biden passed historic laws to rebuild the country, but he knows it's the American people who are the heroes of this story.
America is back.
We've shown each other in the world that there's no quit in America. There's simply no quit in America.
In small towns and big cities, we're coming back stronger than ever. Manufacturing jobs are coming home. High-speed computer chips are getting made right here. America is leading the world in clean energy. There are some who say America is failing. Not Joe Biden. He believes our best days are ahead because he believes in the American people.
Those who bet against America are learning how wrong they are. It's never, ever been a good bet to bet against America. Never.
I'm Joe Biden, and I approve this message.
Yeah, you are. money doesn't hurt. Courage, my world. In money doesn't hurt. Courage.
Trying to do it right. I've been living a lonely life. I've been sleeping here instead. I've been sleeping in my bed. Sleeping in my bed. So show me family. For the blood that I will bleed.
Thank you.